Hello, this is the Sunday Times Politics Weekly, where we bring you the insights and interviews of the forthcoming election. I'm Mike Siluma, and thanks for joining us. This week, as has been the case in the last while, one of the big election stories has been the Jacob Zuma factor and his Umkhonto we Sizwe party. In this episode of the Sunday Times Politics Weekly with my guests, we will try to explain and hopefully demystify the Zuma MKP phenomenon in our politics and in the election campaign, and how it might affect our body politic after May the 29th. Our guest this time, Sanusha Naidu, who is Senior Research Associate at the Institute for Global Dialogue, as well as Susan Boysen, who has been on the podcast before as well, who is visiting professor at the Wits University, but is also Director of Research at the Mapungubwe Institute for Strategic Reflection, or MISTRA.
You asked Mr. Ramaphosa to sit down first. I'm standing.
Now I warn you.
I need to put on my big girl panties and keep going.
You can't have two speakers standing at the same time.
Security services of the Republic of South Africa, you may intervene.
There's been several attempts on my life.
Lower that hand.
It's not alarm.
The president is accused of serious crimes.
I know I'm going to become the president of this country.
You are going to be the president.
I am going to be the president
of South Africa.
Of South Africa.
There's no confusion. Of South Africa.
I will cancel race.
Corrupt people do not eat alone. They have a spider web.
I'm there. I can lead them. I'm ready to be the president of this country.
I now suspend the proceedings. I have warned you.
Welcome to the both of you.
Good afternoon, Mike and Sanusha.
Thanks.
Can I start with you? So not because you're sitting in front of me, you know, but it's just a random. How are we supposed to read? Because everyone's been talking about, I mean, this party is not even a year old, you know, mm-hmm. and I recall mm-hmm. when it was starting, you know, I think it was on a rainy day and he was standing under like a rickety makeshift tent
thing.
And it didn't look like it was going to go anywhere, really.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was like one man and his T-shirt, basically.
Yes, you know.
But it seems to have defied the early odds.
Yes, Mike, it's such a complex phenomenon, and in a strange way, I believe it resonates with conditions in South Africa and some of the political sentiments on the ground. It is so many things, and in the first place, it is a standard political party, even if Zuma and many of his followers define themselves as still within the ANC, and yet also another political party. And this actually speaks to so much of South African politics in the first three decades, mm-hmm. where so much of the contestation was within the governing party, the ruling party, the ANC. And it became factional contestation and mostly stayed within the ANC. Occasionally it led to a breakaway like COPE or the EFF, etc. But then much of it stayed inside the ANC. And this is where we also find former President Jacob Zuma and his followers, where they now straddle this between intra-party contestation and taking it into the electoral domain, fighting against the ANC, and simultaneously as a third element, also bringing in an insurrectionary, rebellious, interruptive, disruptive aspect of politics, where Zuma being, and now that he's not in government anymore, mm-hmm. also being this insurrectionist and threatening violence and disruption of the system. And I think there are so many people on the ground who are still in some way that identify with the ANC and yet are also so angry with the ANC, do not want to take that anger into the usual contest between political parties. And this is where we find this very complex phenomenon.
I was going to come to that, you know, later on as to who gets attracted to the MK party kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Is there grievance? Is there other affiliations or affinities that are drawing the but also to look at the personality and the personage of Jacob Zuma himself.
Yes.
But let's come to that later on.
Certainly.
Yes, Sanusha, I'd like for you to come in here. You know, we were saying that a lot of people are talking about the MK party. If you didn't know, if you arrived in South Africa and you had not been following the news, you'd think maybe the MK party is the fourth largest party in the country. the way people are talking about it, you'd think that Jacob Zuma has got this great potential of once again becoming president because everyone's talking about him. Should his name be on the ballot paper? You know, all of those kinds of things. Should he be the president of the MKP instead of the other guy? You know, kind of. So it looks like he's a larger than life kind of character in this whole thing. Are we overrating or overstating the significance of Jacob Zuma and the MK Party in the, you know, in the lead up to the elections?
Ah, nice to be on the show, Mike, and lovely to share the platform with Susan again. But I think you're right. I think that it's difficult to kind of shift away from the kind of aura that comes with this MK party. And you're right, you know, everybody's kind of almost predetermining that this party is going to do really, really disruptive things in terms of where it's placed in KZN, what's going to happen to it in terms of who's going to be in parliament, in terms of the number of seats they may get in parliament. Does Jacob Zuma want to get a third term as president of the country? Is he wanting to become who's going to be the candidate or the premier if there's a cold kind of split in KwaZulu-Natal around the votes between the ANC, IFP and MK party? I mean, it's all kind of like, you know, out of a Bourne supremacy movie, in a way, an action-packed movie, that you just got these actors that are becoming quite in terms of the architecture of our political landscape. And you mentioned it as a complex dilemma, Susan. It just makes the actors even more complex because they come with so much of their own kind of enigma to this point. And Jacob Zuma has always been that kind of individual that will, you know, take the landscape and make it his own, whether you agree with him, you disagree with him, how he actually utilizes the stage, the imaging, the branding. He's just his demeanor, and he's never away from the limelight. Or you can never get him away from the limelight. He's always there, whether you agree with him, whether you disagree with him. And the MK party has come in that kind of spectacular approach, you know, coming out of that kind of dynamic of a context that they are challenging the ANC, and they're challenging what is almost the ANC dealing with its own kind of identity crisis in terms of this. And of course, Jacob Zuma, being the former president, actually starts to raise this in the context of that speech he did last year in December, where he said he cannot vote for the ANC. I mean, those have dynamic and very, very kind of deep-seated impacts in the way it manifests, and everybody's now looking at this party, and this party is making very, very significant statements that are challenging both our constitutional democracy, but also challenging the institutional architecture of our democracy, and that's the IEC. Look at the statements they're making. They're kind of almost predetermining that this election cannot be anything other than the MK party has to get majority. Those are very, very dramatic statements. But as Susan had rightly pointed out, it comes with that disruptive element. So it's very hard not to focus on them. Okay. It's very hard to say we're not there with them, or to say to them, we can dismiss them from this complex dilemma that we are in.
From where you're sitting, Sanusha, what is Jacob Zuma trading on? What is his attraction to people? You said it's got this aura, but where does that derive from? Because I look at the ANC, for example, it does not look like they've been able to produce a leader with that kind of crowd-pulling kind of charisma, if you like, that Jacob Zuma seems to have, whether one agrees with him or not. What makes him stand out? You know, when he left the presidency, a lot of people wrote him off to say, well, he's going back to Nkandla and look after his chickens and all that kind of thing. And lo and behold, 2024, we're now talking about him, probably more
the
than
chickens
even,
are coming home to
and
roost.
The chickens are coming home to roost, you know, in a sense.
I mean,
I'm just trying to understand what makes him stand out as a politician, whether you agree with his politics or not.
Maybe because he just doesn't want to go away. He can never go away. He's always got something that he pushes the envelope on, whether you call him in a kind of traditional context of political electoral context and contest, he dares to challenge what people are saying. You know, yeah, we're fed up with the system. We're fed up with the fact that we're frustrated that the system is not working for us. And in the context of, you know, looking at other elections like in the US and so forth, you have this pushback against the establishment. And in a way, I'm not saying Jacob Zuma is kind of creating that space, but I'm saying that he's pushing back and he's talking the language that maybe people on the ground in his constituency is that they don't see him as somebody who is everything else around, you know, the nine wasted years that keep coming back and keep following him around. I mean, he takes it on. And that's, for me, something that's quite interesting, because if you're looking at the elections around the world now, you're looking at what's going on in India, what's going on in the US and so forth, you kind of have this dynamic that's emerging within the political architecture of these countries where it's almost like a love-hate relationship that he has with the system. But there are people out there that, you know, he calls out things that you and I say, you know what, you can't do that. You're challenging the institution, the constitution. You're actually going to the point and even challenging the judiciary, which is supposed to be the independence of this country in terms of the application of this democracy. But it's made this democracy a litigative democracy, because everything is now litigated in the way that it's going forward.
Yeah.
So he dares to challenge, but he dares to do it on the basis that I think he has nothing to lose. And he creates that identity for himself. There's nothing I can lose. I'm putting it out there because you may agree with me, you may disagree with me, but who else is going to dare to do that?
Yeah. Susan, I'd like for you to come in here. You know, there are just a couple of elements in terms of his appeal. I was looking at his numbers, the MKP's numbers in the polls. Mm-hmm. It looks like they've made a very strong showing indeed. In KZN and a bit elsewhere, in Mpumalanga, a bit, you know, that kind of thing. But it seems to be mainly in KZN. Now, some people have suggested that part of his platform, you know, one of the central planks is, although unstated, is ethnicity, Zulu ethnic mobilization. What's your view on that?
It is certainly a very big part of it. We can think back of the time that Jacob Zuma came to be in command of the ANC and the surge in ANC support in that province. There is that element of cultural identity, of Zulu-ness in his support. Because for the people of the province, many other people of the province, he really epitomized the message that they were finding their place in the sun in the new South Africa, that he was there to represent them
at the time.
And that bonhomie flowed across the province and people felt they were getting advantages out of his presidency, whereas previously they felt slightly marginalized and slightly gradually moving away from the IFP more and more towards the ANC. And that's where the ANC managed to consolidate its support in that province at the time. Now that Jacob Zuma, in the last quite a number of years now that Zuma has not been in charge, people have felt more marginalized in there, and we've seen the ANC support in that province decline again. But now with Zuma rising into the limelight again, people have also come to experience the socio-economy of the country much more harshly. When Zuma's time was in its full reign and there was a global financial crisis, things started getting bad, but were not consolidated as bad and declining anymore. Mm-hmm. Now, in the time of Cyril Ramaphosa, when there's so much action, so much narrative against corruption, etc., Zuma's memories suddenly become glorified. He was somebody who had looked more after the people, after people who hate seeing Cyril Ramaphosa's smiling face on posters, because that doesn't symbolize their lives of poverty, unemployment, much deprivation, many lapses in government's policy and implementation at this stage. So there's a deep anger in there, and they feel, in a way, it's still loyal resentment, loyal rebellion, not completely writing off the liberation history in South Africa by supporting Zuma. And yet it is a step, that kind of support for Zuma, as Sanusha also pointed out, that can be very, very disruptive, very can throw aside much of the prevailing political system as we have. Because Zuma already, he and his followers already dominate so much of the public narrative. And can you imagine, even if he is just a backbencher in the parliament of the seventh administration incoming after the elections, what kind of disruptive factor that could be? And if he does very well, his party does very well in KwaZulu-Natal, some of the polls even suggest they could do better than the ANC, although I'm not quite convinced of that. But the point is they will do well in that province. It can be a different kind of politics we see in the institutions.
I know that it would be difficult for any of us to know what exactly is going on in his head, you know. but let's hazard a guess, you know. As we trying to understand, you know, where he's wanting to go and what keeps him moving politically, you know. What do you think, Susan, is Jacob Zuma's end game? Going back to Nkandla and looking after his chickens and whatever, or grandchildren or whatever, older people tend to do. But he seems to have a vested interest in the South African political scene. What is this vested interest, and what is the game plan? Surely there must be something beyond just being disruptive for the sake of being disruptive.
Well, the predominant sentiment that I think prevails in his head is that of feeling personally incredibly wronged by the action against him, by the corruption allegations, so much of it so pervasive that one can take it as proven against him. He feels wronged, and he really has got the sentiment of revenge in his head. And
it's revenge against who?
Against Cyril Ramaphosa, against that part of the ANC. He feels so much that the ANC belonged to him. That is something that came over the years, and he felt justified in taking control of the ANC and doing with the ANC whatever he felt was good for him and his constituency. So it's very difficult for him in his head to move away from that. It's difficult to differentiate when he pretends to believe it for convenience, expedience, and when it is a deep-held perception, belief in his own head. But I think the bottom line is that it is a revenge action, and MKP is a revenge party that will wreak havoc on the ANC and could really tear the ANC apart much more than what has been happening so far.
Sanusha, do you want to take your turn in getting into Jacob Zuma's headspace? What's the end game here?
Being in his head is a very dangerous place to be. But I think what Susan said also kind of resonates with me, because I think it's about vindication. It's about him vindicating himself. Remember, he didn't finish his second term, and that was really a big challenge for him, a big blight on him as a politician, as a leader, as an elder. And so for him to be caught in these crosswinds of where the ANC has also, through Ramaphosa, constantly belabored and constantly referenced the 9 wasted years, is a big telltale sign for Zuma. He's an elder. He's the person that essentially should be respected and revered. And to have this now being put out there for him as an individual, I mean, it actually goes back to his own relationship to the liberation struggle, how he sacrificed, how he was a young boy, how he went into the liberation struggle, how he rose in the ranks of that. And for him to then have this legacy of where he should be now as an elder within the party, as a revered statesman, as somebody who gives counsel to the party, to be actually now being seen in this way, you know, this is now about him also getting his vindication and to show within that contestation of the party. You know, the ANC is fighting its many different faces right now in the party. It's dealing with its own demons, so to speak. And so what's going on in this party is that it's got this idea that, you know, it's become so transactional at times. So Jacob Zuma can't stand up. And he can do what he does because it's a vindication for him.
And now we've got this odd situation that has arisen, that he has gone and basically started his own political party, but he's still a member of the ANC. And the ANC is not in a hurry to do anything about it. The last time I checked, the ANC's constitution was very clear about loyalty to the ANC. So it would hypothetically have been impossible for any other person, any other member of the ANC to stay in the ANC but start up a competitor political party and make it clear to the whole world that actually we're against the ANC. In fact, agitate for people not to vote for the ANC and then stay in the party. So what is the ANC's, what's causing the paralysis?
Yes, you know, the ANC really took the easy route out, like saying he has taken himself out of the ANC. But the ANC...
But he hasn't. He's still there.
He has not officially. He is that it is very much still there. So it's really ANC being very conflicted in this way, thinking that it will just trigger much more reaction if they do take action against him. And that could be the case, because Jacob Zuma has got so many constituencies that he can easily mobilize. We see the crowds that he pulls around his Stalingrad court case appearances and litigation efforts. Yeah, and he attracts that following, those expressions of sentiment on the ground. So the ANC probably thinks he does not want to provoke more of that. The more they just stay silent about it, and the more they perhaps, and many people are saying that MKP is by now quite infiltrated by the ANC, and that's why MKP does changes. It doesn't do leadership elections. It changes its leadership structure. And that's how they pull Jabulani Nkumalo out as the actual leader of the ANC. Of the MKP.
Yes.
There is a difference. I must remember that when I speak.
And some similarities somewhere there, you know?
Yes. But the ANC is very scared that it can provoke even more reaction on the ground, because there are people on the ground who are just justifying with the kind of politics that Jacob Zuma is conducting against the ANC.
But then, Sanusha, what happens to the whole idea of, you know, ANC people like to say, I'm a disciplined member of the ANC kind of thing, you know, however one defines that. but what sort of impact could how the ANC's handling of the Jacob Zuma thing, you know, have on the party itself? In other words, other party members looking at how he's being dealt with, how are they supposed to read that?
Yeah, I mean, I think the ANC has created a serious dilemma for itself. It's kind of never been anticipated a situation of this caliber before. It's never thought that a leader with such kind of pull on the ground, such kind of ability to draw the crowds in and to split the party in such a dynamic way will ever be something they'll have to deal with. So they're grappling with that because, you know, in the run-up to this 2024 election, and also in the context of the elective conference, you heard about the step aside rule, and you saw that being applied, and however we may interpret it, it was applied because it was seen as something that will legitimize the party in terms of trying to create itself as some kind of moral regeneration. But this now really throws everything out of the window, and so other leaders will kind of say, well, if Jacob Zuma is an exception to the rule on your own kind of constitution, then what does this mean for others who will come down the line, and how will you see they will be treated? But I think there's a slight, if I may, there's a subtle difference here. You're dealing with Jacob Zuma. And as I said earlier, he dares to challenge. And he knows that when he goes out there and he draws those crowds and he makes those statements and he speaks and he's got that animation that he has, you know, every stage is a theater for him. And so he knows how to play that game. Whereas other leaders that may come down the line may not have that kind of effervescence that Zuma has and able to rile up the crowd with the way that he puts out his messages. So I think there's that question as well in terms of, is it easier not to go after Jacob Zuma? Because as Susan said, you can create more provocation and that could create a different level of challenge for you in for the ANC at the ground level in terms of mobilization of support. But then You can go for other leaders who don't have that same kind of, and I put it in inverted commas, charisma.
Mm-hmm. Now, if we look at the numbers now. Susan, you are always crunching the numbers. You know, I mean, you've been crunching them
since as long as
I can remember. You know, I was very surprised by the numbers that came up for the MK party in KZN. You know, I mean, like above 10. You know, closer to, you know, I don't have all of them right now, but it's a decent showing for a new party.
It is a very decent showing for a new party. And of course, Mike, we have to be very careful with all the different opinion polls. So many other measure quite different things in different ways. For example, some don't filter the results by whether the people, the respondents in the sample are registered or whether they intend to vote. And of course, their time differences is always a snapshot. But even that, there are broad trends. So the broad thrust of all these, and there are at least three or four different opinion polls with different margins of error. That means acknowledging some can be more accurate than others. Mm-hmm. But still, the broad thrust generally show exactly what you're referring to. And that is good performance, very good performance for a new party, especially at that provincial level. Mm-hmm. In those different polls, they come with between 24% and 36% of the KZN vote, which will in some cases make them the biggest party in the province, if that is anything to go by.
Even overtaking the ANC, overtaking the IFP.
Mm-hmm. You know, overtaking kind of the ANC, and definitely the IFP as well. Mm-hmm. And when we also look at the by-election results, there have been several by-elections in KwaZulu-Natal province, mostly in the Zululand region, which is not the typical ANC region. The ANC strong support in KZN is more in eThekwini and just north and just south and just south northwest of the eThekwini area. In those areas, ANC is stronger. Mm-hmm. But in the Zululand areas, there where we've seen these by-elections, and in Mpumalanga and areas governed by Bekie local municipality, for example, bordering Gauteng, the MKP did very good showings there. And so together, the polls plus the by-election results point to a party that is hurting the other political parties across the board. It is taking support from the ANC, from the IFP, from the National Freedom Party that spread off of the IFP whenever we still hear of the NFP, but they're still strong in Zululand area as well, and from the EFF. That means all of these parties are suffering, and the DA's multi-party charter grouping are also suffering because the IFP is such an integral part of that charter. So everybody is being hurt and hit by the MKP's performance in that province. And of course, the province being the second most populous and voter-rich province in South Africa, any party does well in that province is also going to do well nationally. And the poll, like one that we've seen by Mark Data recently, ENCA released that, the NKP comes across as potentially very close to the EFF, possibly among the four big parties in parliament. We have to see that this zeitgeist, the spirit of the time still gets sustained, that MKP manages to carry that over into 6 weeks or roughly from now into the elections. But so far, by all indications, they will be carrying it through into election results. And that will make provincial legislature very different in KwaZulu-Natal, will make the national parliament very different. And we've heard that the MKP people also say four or five provinces, they guarantee the party will have an impact on the provincial elections.
Sanisha, the another anomaly that we're having to deal with here is that what then happens? Let's say the Concord decides that actually he shouldn't be on the ballot box, on the ballot paper. What would happen? So his party garners whatever support it gets. It's entitled to a couple of MPs maybe or representatives in KZN. And then what happens to him? He goes back to the chickens. or what? Or he starts an almighty chaos in the country, or his followers do that?
I think they've already started the almighty chaos, because when he stands outside those courtrooms and he addresses the supporters and the crowd, Susan alluded to this earlier, the Stalingrad tactics. He's already made the people think that the IEC is biased. He's already made the MKP has already made the assumptions that this election, it can be compromised. And so this constitutional court ruling, whatever it's going to be, and I'm not a law expert, so interesting to see what the next steps are from a legal perspective, is going to be quite a critical, significant, and a very politically heavy one. Because also bearing in mind, it's the head of the constitutional court, Justice Zondo, as the constitutional court head, versus Zuma, not necessarily MKP. And it's the same constitutional court head, Justice Zondo, who essentially is the person who actually said, you know, took Zuma to the constitutional court for not abiding by the appearance to the Zondo commission. So it's going to be interesting kind of optics that's going to happen. So I actually feel that this is going to, it's going to be quite a precarious kind of situation, because for the first time now, we're going to see things that are happening outside of an election that is yet to be held. And the results of that election are going to be critical, as we have alluded to in the discussion. But it's going to be critical as well, because now the IEC has to, you know, it disrupts the IEC's timetable of where they need to be in terms of their preparations and their ballot paper being going for printing and so forth. But it also makes it much more difficult, because the aspersions cast on our institutions of democracy and on the constitutional court, if they rule differently, it's going to be very important to see what kind of reaction there's going to be by MKP. And I get the sense that we have to deal with more security now than ever before in this election.
Let's close by touching on a meta strategic. Okay, beyond the election, presumably the ANC, as everyone seems to be in agreement, the ANC dips below 50%. They go around shopping for possible coalition partners. Could you see a tie-up between Susan, the ANC, and MKP, or do you think that there's too much blood there between the two, in particular between Jacob Zuma and some of the ANC leaders?
Mike, that's fascinating, Isha. I cannot personally envisage that. There's too much blood around it. The two parties are too much defined exactly by the split between these two leaders. On other fronts, there may still be accommodations that are possible, but less so between these two parties than with the others. And we can see Zuma really defining it so sharply. There's a precipice there. And I think there's an unbridgeable gap between these two parties. And the EFF and the ANC could still come together on some points. Possibly not if they make sure Floyd Chivambu, the Minister of Finance, as we have heard that demand. But there can be some convergence and some shared interests. We know the EFF is a bit like the Patriotic Alliance in these election coalitions after elections that we've seen so far. They're willing to settle for nice positions that will give them control over influential portfolios. With the MKP and the ANC, this division between Ramaphosa and Zuma, and between those factions are the two ANCs. Now the ANC and the MKP, they're just too sharply defined to make that bridgeable. So I cannot see that. And it's all going to depend post-election if indeed the ANC comes in below 50%. How much of a top-up, how much that shortfall of votes is, whether it can just be small top-up parties, whether they need a bigger substantial party, or whether they would have to go a type of government of national unity route and try to get everybody on board in an inclusive government.
Sanusha, the last word will go to you. In the event, you know, irrespective of what Susan has just said now, in the event we get to a point where the ANC sees the need to maybe enter into a conversation with the MKP, at what price do you think that would be?
I think the price would be a recognition, a kind of humbling of the ANC to the MKP. And more importantly, I think coming out and saying to a large extent, almost like kowtowing to the MKP. Because I think what Susan has raised is a really, really important point. And if you expand on it a little bit from my perspective, what the MKP wants and what Zuma wants is really to be revered as the ANC and who owns the ANC. That's going to be key. It's an intellectual property question. It's a trademark question. They went to court over these things.
And
you know, there's been the bad blood runs so deep that I'm not sure if it can be transfused in any way for creating a kind of cleaning up of this tension. So for me, I think it will be to the advantage of how much the ANC is going to compromise its own for the MKP. And that is a non-negotiable for the MKP. They're standing tall right now in their vindication.
Susan, and the compromise? ANC, do you think ANC, there can be a compromise here?
The ANC, Ramaphosa's ANC, and that is the ANC that we've got.
That's what they call it. And that's what they call it, you know, the MKP.
The
Ramaphosa's ANC. The real ANC or something.
Yeah. They cannot define themselves. They cannot exist with that kind of compromise in their bag. They have to try to make it work without that type of compromise. I cannot see them go there.
Well, looks like that's all we have time for on the Sunday Times Politics Weekly for this week. And I'd like to thank our guests for their time and for their interesting perspectives. Sanusha Naidu, Senior Research Associate at the Institute for Global Dialogue, as well as Susan Boysen, who's visiting professor at Wits University, as well as Director of Research at MISTRA, which is the Mapungubwe Institute for Strategic Reflection. Thank you very much to the both of you. It's been a great pleasure chatting with you.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Sanusha.
Thank you, Mike, as well to Susan.
I'm Mike Siluma, and until next time, do stay safe, stay blessed, and let's do good for our country.